540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago, Illinois' top prosecutor thanks survivors for speaking out on allegations of sexual abuse of children by Catholic clergy. CBS's Allison Keyes.
The new report finds that nearly 2,000 children were sexually abused over 70 years, nearly four times more than the 103 named in a 2018 church review. Illinois Attorney General Kwame Raoul says many abusers will never see justice in court.
When such trust is betrayed with abuse to children, and there are efforts to cover it up, the call for accountability should be resounding.
The Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests says the leadership of every Illinois diocese kept known abusers under wraps and refused to acknowledge the truth. Allison Keyes, CBS News.
Two people are dead and seven injured after a home that was under construction collapsed in Conroe, Texas. This resident says it happened after strong storms moved through the area north of Houston.
The rain kind of stopped and we realized that the sun came back out. But around that same time, too, we were hearing the ambulances and the fire trucks. And then within 10 minutes, the helicopter. And we knew something bad had probably happened in the neighborhood.
South Carolina lawmakers pass and send to the governor, who has promised to sign it, a ban on most abortions around 6 weeks. The bill passed mostly along party lines, with the notable exception of the state Senate's five women members who opposed it. CBS News legal analyst Thane Rosenbaum.
South Carolina legislators have been at war with one another since Roe v. Wade was overturned. The state already had a trigger law in place restricting access to abortion once Dobbs was decided. The South Carolina Supreme Court then found that the restriction to be unconstitutional in violation of the state's right to privacy, the very same issue the Supreme Court of the United States declined to accept.
Republican Florida Governor Ron DeSantis is expected to officially launch his bid for the White House tomorrow during a live event on Twitter with Elon Musk. CBS's Robert Costa.
It's not clear whether Musk will explicitly endorse DeSantis during this event. Meanwhile, a Trump advisor tells CBS News that by going on Twitter for his launch, DeSantis is showing he doesn't want to interact with people. But a DeSantis ally tells us that the governor will hold a formal campaign rally with his supporters in the coming days.
President Biden and House Speaker Kevin McCarthy vowed to talk every day until they seal the deal on raising the debt ceiling and preventing a default. As for a timeline to get it done, White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre says,
I'm not going to get into dates. What I can say, there's an urgency. We want to see this done as soon as possible as it relates to the debt limit. The teams are going to meet on a regular basis, multiple times a day, to deal with the budget negotiations.
This is CBS News.
Need to hire quality candidates fast? You need Indeed. Their powerful hiring platform helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates all in one place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Continue the conversation online. Find and follow Civic Media on Facebook and on Twitter.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. 7% of Wisconsin prisoners are behind bars for crimes they committed as kids. A study by Human Rights for Kids says that's more than any other state except Louisiana. The next big state budget battle looks to be Wisconsin's share of maintaining American Family Field. The ballpark supporters note the taxpayers own the stadium and the Brewers are just a tenant.
And a tenant really, they're not usually a required to do major infrastructure maintenance at the facility.
That's Dan Kopanky, who serves on a coalition of supporters of the ballpark. A 2020 study showed AmFam Field had generated $2.5 billion for Wisconsin's economy. In sports, the Astros bullied the Brewers last night 12-2, same two teams tonight, and Green Bay will host the 2025 NFL Draft. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Have fun on the lake this summer. Treat yourself and find the watercraft you want at Action Boathouse Showroom just south of 59 on 164 in Waukesha. Check out the fun and versatile Sea-Doo Switch with its powerful Rotex jet engine. Action Boathouse Showroom also has a selection of luxury fishing boats or pontoon boats from seven top USA manufacturers. The team at Action Boathouse Showroom is excited to help you launch into the sun this season and onto the lake. Action Boathouse Showroom just north of 59 on 164 in Waukesha.
North Shore Healthcare is hiring. As the largest provider of post-acute care in Wisconsin, they offer skilled nursing and assisted living services, as well as home health and hospice care through North Shore at Home. They're looking for compassionate individuals who want to make a difference in the lives of those they serve. If you're a CNA, licensed nurse, administrator, or business professional and want to grow your career, visit nshorehc.com/careers to find out why North Shore Healthcare is the right choice for you.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Thank you for listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Now join us anytime by finding and following our Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram pages. You'll also find social media links for your favorite shows and hosts on our website, civicmedia.us.
.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So as we tick down the days to the default, which I got to tell you, I think is going to happen. The more and more I listen to Republicans, the more I listen to Matt Gaetz, the more I think they truly do want to shoot the hostage. And if you saw the quote today out of Matt Gaetz, he said, I think my conservative colleagues, for the most part, support limit, save, grow, and they don't feel like they should negotiate with our hostage. With our hostage. Now, again, you go, well, you're talking about Joe Biden. No, he's not talking about Biden. He's talking about all of us, the entire country. We're the hostage because we're the ones who are going to see all of the negative ramifications that are going to come from a default. All the pain, all the struggle, the recession that could be triggered by this. You and me, working people, we're the ones getting stiffed. And here to share some thoughts on the hostage situation, and if there really are as many Republicans who want to shoot us as I imagine, I've asked our good friend Craig Harrington to come talk with us. Craig is Media Matters Research Director. You can check out their website, mediamatters.org. Craig, thanks for taking time for us.
Yeah, Rick, thank you for having me on again.
So he said the quiet part out loud. We're hostages. Yeah. Surprised?
Yeah, I actually was a little bit surprised to see that rhetoric coming out of the Republican caucus. And, if you saw, we at Media Matters, we published a newspaper study reviewing coverage of the debt ceiling crisis in the first half of this month, earlier today. And I did a tweet thread of some of the highlights of that study. And one of the things that I pointed out is that the American public deserves to know that the Republican plan for the debt ceiling negotiations is to shoot the hostage. Very clearly, their plan is either they will get what they are demanding, which is dramatic, shocking, devastating budget cuts across the federal government that would truly, truly harm tens of millions of Americans proximately and immediately through these budget cuts, or they'll destroy the entire global economy. So they'll either destroy the American safety net through the concessions they're demanding from Democrats, or they'll destroy the entire American and potentially global economies if they don't get the concessions that they're demanding from Democrats. But in both scenarios, they shoot the hostage. Yeah, and that is the plan.
Exactly. You're right. In both scenarios, they get what they want, which is a working class that's struggling. Because look, if they do get the cuts that have been proposed, especially the ones by the Republican Study Committee, massive cuts, which I think would trigger a recession anyway, because you're going to pull all of this demand out of the economy. Basically, the bottom would fall out of spending, and we would have mass chaos, layoffs like crazy in either direction when you pull that kind of funding out of an economy like they're talking about.
Yeah, and one of the things that we've seen is because the Republicans finally actually put together a plan of what their proposal was, $4.5 to $4.8 trillion worth of spending reductions, analysts were finally able to put that together and figure out what it would mean. Now, one of the things that immediately came out of the White House Office for Management and Budget, and also an outside organization called the Center for Budget and Policy Priorities, they did analyses of this, and the White House found that this would equate to a 22% cut across the board, including veterans and the defense budget. The Center on Budget and Policy Priorities did an independent analysis and came to a 23% average cut across the board. And then McCarthy, you know, when you present this and say McCarthy is planning to cut one-fifth away from the defense budget and one-fifth away from veterans over the next decade, McCarthy then scrambled and built a carve-out so that you wouldn't actually affect military direct spending or veterans direct spending. And so the Center for American Progress did a secondary analysis of non-defense discretionary spending, also including veterans benefits in that defense spending, which has never been done before. And they said that if we did the same budget reductions that McCarthy is demanding, but we didn't touch the defense budget and we didn't touch the veterans budget, it would equate to an average of a 58% cut across the board for non-defense, non-veterans discretionary spending over the next 10 years. That means that more than half of the federal government outside of defense and veterans affairs would be denuded, defunded, dismantled over the next 10 years. That is not what any American American voted for in the midterms. That is not what the public wants. These are deeply unpopular. These are legislative proposals that Republicans could never enact through regular order. And when they had a trifecta, when they had the presidency and the Congress, they didn't even think about this stuff in 2017. They only demand these devastating cuts when Democrats are in power. And the media does, frankly, a pretty poor job of explaining those stakes and the facts to the public when we're faced with this.
Or just, you know, how important, you know, government spending overall is. I mean, we've been trained for decades, you know, to think that, you know, we need to slash and burn. And we've heard the Grover Norquist, and, you know, we need, the government's so small we can drag it in the bathtub and drown it. You know, at some point, you got to go educate people on what exactly government spending does. Are we really going to could do all of the horrible things that they want? And the answer is no, we're not that society yet. Maybe someday down the road, we'll starve children and kick veterans to the curb on purpose. But I don't think we're there yet.
Well, this is the thing, you know, even during the Trump era, when we saw the sort of revitalization of the extreme right wing in the United States, we did not see demands for these kind of cuts. What we're seeing from people on the left and the right is a public demand for the government to do more, to be more involved, and to be more forthcoming with resources for the American public. Some parts of the public, particularly on the far right, want to see resources taken away from other groups who mostly they consider immigrants. But they want to see non-white populations and non-native born populations have resources taken away from them, but they don't want to give up resources themselves.
Overwhelmingly,
when this is put to the public, they say, no, we actually don't have a spending problem. If we have a spending problem in any way, it's that we don't spend enough. And I strongly encourage you can use fiscal tools that are put together by conservative outlets. You can put together fiscal tools that are from non-aligned outlets. You can find a budget calculator online with 15, 20 seconds of Googling, and you can go through and point for point do your own deficit and budget reduction plans. And what you'll find is there is a lot of stuff that you do not want to cut. And the big flashy things that people think they're going to cut and save money, like cutting NASA, cutting foreign aid, cutting the F-35 fighter jet program, that is a drop in the bucket. The problem isn't that we are overspending. We don't have a spending problem. That's what Republicans have said for years, and that's what the media has largely gone along with.
No, we've got a revenue problem.
We have a tax problem. That's right.
That's it.
We have a revenue problem. We don't tax enough, and that's where the money is.
Well, I absolutely agree. Been saying that for years. You listen to the Rick Smith Show here with Craig Harrington. Craig is the research director over at Media Matters, mediamatters.org, the website. Let's quick go to the phones. I got John on line one from Wisconsin. John, what's on your mind?
Well, I think this is my opinion. This is what this is all about. And this information is taken from the Harvard Business Review, which I would say is hardly a left-leaning study group. And these are quotes from a study that was, I believe, came out in March of this year. A booming labor market, exceptionally strong household balance sheet, keep spending high. Household net worth, far higher than COVID for every single income. Firms are going strong, profitability to record highs, not surprising with the price gouging that's going on. Fast wage growth, consistently strong sales growth. Firms are reluctant to turn to layoffs. And finally, and this is a very important part of this too, there is, and this is a quote, the absence of convincing systemic threats of inflation. So what this is about is, I think, the Republicans have been telling us for years now, ever since Biden got into office, the economy is terrible. Biden's making it worse. This just isn't the case. But it's to their advantage to make it terrible. And the best way to do that, you tell me. Not hard to figure out, is it?
No, and this is what I've been saying for a while. This is all about creating the recession that they have so wanted from the beginning. You're spot on, yep, John. Craig, you want to jump in on that?
Yeah, you know, your caller is exactly right. And this is why Republicans use this negotiating tactic around the debt ceiling. This is how they game the conversation in the media. We wrote about this earlier today, like I said earlier, at MediaMatters.org. You can find this study. Beginning in 1995, when there was a Democratic president, but Republicans controlled Congress, and accelerating from 2011, when there was also a Democratic president, but Republicans controlled Congress, we started to see more and more use of this debt ceiling brinkmanship, where the Republican extremist, where the extremist contingent of the Republican majority in the House or the Senate or both was threatening to drive the country into this brick wall if they couldn't get the policy demands that policies enacted that they were demanding. And all of those policies, all of them were depressive, were essentially intended to manufacture a recession. And what do you remember from the late 1990s? We remember the booming 90s. We remember Bill Clinton being popular because the economy was strong. Where were we in 2010? We were finally recovering from the Great Recession. And what did the Republicans do? They strapped a straitjacket to the economy to slow down economic growth, to grind the recovery from the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act to a halt through the Budget Control Act of 2011 and through sequestration. They used this because they hoped that it would help them win in 1996, and they failed. They hoped it would help them win in 2012, and they failed. And they hope that they can create, manufacture a recession in this economy right now so that they can win in 2024. This is not rocket science. They've done this before. They'll do it again. That's the reason Republicans didn't get rid of the debt ceiling in 2017 when Donald Trump was openly talking about like what a nuisance this thing is, and maybe we should just get rid of it.
I'm with you. You got any other thoughts, John?
Yeah, the Republicans are now balking, of course, at paying for money that they've already authorized. It's already been spent. All we're doing is collecting our IOUs back. And about a quarter of those IOUs, a little thing that was $7 trillion or so, roughly one quarter of the entire national debt put on in 4 years under Trump. Now they don't want to pay for it. Excuse me, what's wrong with this picture? These are guys that already voted for this stuff. I think what's got to happen is this. I really think that this has got to be put to a stop. And I think the best way to do it is for Biden to invoke Section 4, the 14th Amendment, the good faith and credit of the United States of America. Yes, it'll be taken to court. Yes, it'll probably go to the Supreme Court. And I really don't trust the six reactionary Federalist snakes that are in charge of the court at this point. But something's got to be done about this, because this kind of stuff has got to stop.
I'm with you, John. I appreciate the call, John. Thanks so much. No, he's not wrong. I take it a little bit different, though, Craig. I mean, I look at the six, how did he put it, the vipers in the court? I look at them as they're bought and paid for by corporate America. Corporate America doesn't want us to default. Corporate America doesn't want a recession. So the part of me goes, I think on this, at least, having a bought and paid for Supreme Court might not be a horrible thing.
Yeah, it sort of reminds me of something that I heard from Neil deGrasse Tyson. I think this must have been a decade ago. He's been interviewed by The Daily Show or something. And he was a science advisor for the Bush administration, even though he himself identifies as fairly liberal. And I believe he's actually a registered Democrat. And he said, the thing that you have to understand about these Republicans is they don't want to die poor. And so they're not actually going to advocate things that would destroy the economy, because they don't want to die poor. They don't really believe in this stuff to the point that it makes them bleed. The problem is that that's not true necessarily anymore. It was certainly true that that Republicans didn't want to touch the stove, and that their media allies were not going to embolden them to the point of touching the stove 10 years ago.
Yeah, but they didn't have Marjorie Trainwreck Greene. They didn't have Gates. They didn't have the cabal of crazy that's leading things right now. They do. I mean, they want to shoot the hostage.
The number of Republicans in the House who are publicly available and supportive of just a clean debt ceiling lift, just doing what we've done 78 times in the past and just raising the debt ceiling. Like, how many can you think of today? In past iterations, there were dozens, maybe half a dozen, maybe a dozen. But now, is it even one? Is it five? You need four or five votes to join the Democratic discharge petition that is currently working through the House to just give a clean debt ceiling increase. And out of the 200 or so Republicans, are there five? It remains to be seen. Now, like, does Harlan Crow, the now infamous benefactor of at least Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, does he want us to default on the national debt and destroy the value of all the currency that he's been hoarding like a dragon for decades? He probably would want to avoid that scenario. And so maybe if we do throw this to the Supreme Court, you'll see calmer minds prevail. But I think it's actually really interesting what your caller just brought up. And think about the conversation we're now having in public. Like, the three words, mint the coin. You know what mint the coin means. In 2014, if I said mint the coin to you, Rick, would you have had any idea what I was talking about? If I mentioned Section 4 of the 14th Amendment of the United States Constitution, would anyone Nobody. Know what we were talking about? Look how far the Overton window has moved in the mainstream media conversation to the left on these issues. It's not an area where just the right extremism is prevailing. They are driving so far to the right that they're forcing a corrective mechanism, particularly in mainstream press, and much more strongly in liberally aligned press, where the conversation is now just like to find a way to get away from this gimmick entirely. It kind of reminds you of the handful of people, just a small handful, who, when Merrick Garland was being blocked by Mitch McConnell, they said, Obama should just send him to the Supreme Court. Just have him show up to work on Monday. And if John Roberts wants to send him away, let John Roberts send him away. But like, Obama has received the advice and consent of the Senate, and they refuse to vote, but he can still appoint a Supreme Court justice, and he should just appoint him.
I remember and that. And look, this is the important part of this. I've been saying this for a very long time, that, you know, Democrats don't seem to have a fight in them. If there's a street fight going on, they'll offer to hold your coat, but they're never going to ball up the digits and get in there and knock around. This is why I think Biden in this moment, if he does the thing I want him to do, will maybe push back on that Dick Cheney frame of, you know, Democrats cave. It's what they do. Because it's been learned behavior. We've allowed Republicans to hold the hostages and do all this stuff, and then we give in at the last minute. And again, as I said earlier, it's because Democrats care. They don't want to burn the house down. They don't want children to go hungry. They don't want seniors to have to eat cat food. They don't want all the horrible outcomes that are going to come. And they're dealing with people who are nihilists. They are willing to let people go hungry. They're willing to let the people that they take pictures with a flag behind them, be homeless. They don't care about you or me. That, to me, is the simple response to all of this.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting. There are two sort of historical precedents that I think are worth lingering on a little bit here. One of them is in 2011, who was the person who was negotiating with Mitch McConnell, negotiating it earnestly and in good faith to try to find a solution that would bring both sides to the table? The person who was negotiating, leading the negotiations for the White House, was Joe Biden. He remembers how the Republicans gamed the media conversation and how right-wing media allies of those Republicans set the groundwork for the Obama administration to, frankly, lose that debt ceiling negotiation. Does he want to go through the same process again, having had the benefit of hindsight?
Yeah.
I don't know, but it doesn't seem, particularly from the media conversations that we can see, it doesn't seem that the White House is as eager to negotiate and as eager to come to the table as they were in 2011. Nope. And the point you made about how Democrats care, it goes back to the first time we saw the debt ceiling in the modern iteration really be used. as a hostage-taking technique from the Republicans. And it was after the Republican Revolution of 1994. Did you know that in Congress today, there are more Democrats left over from the Republican Revolution than there are Republicans? They came in with these sweeping majorities during the Gingrich era, but once they lost the majority, those Republicans got the heck out. They weren't that interested in governing from the minority. They were there for the theatrics. They were there to get on TV. And then when they were no longer in power, they got out. Meanwhile, those Democrats, they came here to work, and work, you do the work even when you're in the minority.
That's an excellent
and so
point.
There's a generation of people who've been working really hard and who've been facing this Republican intransigence for years. And it's possible that there's just a lot of muscle memory built up now that the Democratic Party is better suited for this fight. And we certainly are seeing, you know, you just look at media interviews, just look at MSNBC or CNN nightly, look at who's being quoted in the newspapers. You are seeing more and more Democrats saying, like, take this fight. Use the 14th Amendment, mint the coin.
I hope so. Ball up the digits and get in there and knock around. That's simple. But Craig, I appreciate the time. Great stuff as always. Keep up the good work.
Yeah, thank you for your time, Rick.
Yeah, you as well. Our good friend Craig Harrington. Make sure you check out their website, MediaMatters.org, where he's the research director. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So evidently, Ron DeSantis is going to be announcing his presidential bid on Wednesday. Going to do that on Twitter with Elon Musk sitting right next to him. So if you think Twitter is not a right-wing social media outlet, you know, I don't know what to tell you. And I got a lot of my friends on the left going, no, you know, we've got to stay and we've got to fight. I'm like, if you're paying Elon Musk a nickel, you're paying too much, and you're part of the problem. It's time to abandon Twitter. Let it go. Just let it go. I know, we got to stay in there and fight. Nope. Bunch of crazy people. And Musk has been the one who's done that. They've destroyed it. It's time to move on and find somewhere else where sanity may rule. Just my thoughts. Now, it's interesting. He's doing it on Twitter with Musk. Again, this is the free speech platform. Where the billionaire is you know, holding his hand. I saw a report that said, you know, this is kind of a slap in the face to Fox News, you know, because, hey, that was supposed to be the, you know, the center of conservative, you know, the whole, you know, megaphone. This is now challenging that central tenet of conservative media, the F channel. That's interesting. And as its value has gone down, you kind of got to wonder, what's that going to mean for the F channel? Now, Trump's got his social media, the Truth Social, which President Biden and his advisors are not joining, evidently, which I don't blame them. Why? Why bother? Nothing good over there. Nothing but headaches. But I do find it interesting that he's not. Now, DeSantis evidently is getting together a bunch of business leaders to raise money, you know, because you do what you got. You got to get your bundlers. And I see what he's doing to Disney. If you're a business owner, are you gonna saddle up with this guy after seeing all of the things that he's doing to Disney, which is one of the largest employers in his state? Really? Is thin-skinned and is really kind of awkward and goofy? I can't wait to see Musk and DeSantis sitting next to each other. Two of the most awkward human beings I think I've ever seen, to see them married next to each other. That in itself will be entertaining. that in itself will be well worth enduring listening to either of them talk. But this is the moment and the place we're in. So DeSantis is going to be in. Is he going to be the guy? I don't know. I do think it'll be interesting to watch Trump tear into him. I do think that that will at least be entertaining. Say what you want about Trump. He's ruthless. Good luck, Ron. Quick break. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two.
On this day in labor history, the year was 2003. That was the day that the U.S. Senate approved more than $300 billion in tax cuts over the next decade. The cuts barely passed. Vice President Dick Cheney cast the deciding vote 51-50. Starting in 2001, President George W. Bush proposed and pushed for a series of drastic tax cuts. The administration promised the changes would help to create jobs and grow the economy. But the results fell far short of that goal. 10 years after the massive tax cuts, the Washington Post ran a story analyzing their impact. The article stated, quote, "By any measure, the Bush tax cuts have benefited the wealthy more than the middle class. The top 20% of earners received 73% of the tax relief. The bottom 20% only received 1%. Coupled with spending on wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, the tax cuts sent the national debt soaring. And those promised jobs? They never materialized. 2001 to 2007 marked the worst period of job growth since the 1950s. Then, in 2008, the recession wiped out 8 million jobs. Many of the Bush tax cuts were designed to sunset or expire after so many years. Yet when it came time for the cuts to end in 2010, Republicans in Congress fought to keep them going. AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka declared, "It is absolutely insane that in these tough economic times, some people want to continue George W. Bush's tax giveaways to millionaires. Working families are losing their jobs, their benefits, and their homes. They are the ones who need help." The Bush tax cuts finally expired in 2013, although new legislation repackaged and continued many of them. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
If poobahs of the National Democratic Party wonder why working-class families, which once formed the party's solid base of political support, have gone astray, they might ponder the awful message they're sending by constantly smooching Senator Joe Manchin's tail. The multimillionaire West Virginia coal baron and anti-democratic Democrat is demanding that a massively polluting pipeline named Mountain Valley be rammed through rivers, watersheds, national parks, and down the throats of the people of West Virginia, Virginia, and North Carolina. Why? Money. The senator's fossil fuel funders, who own the project, want the federal government to mandate construction of their corporate boondoggle. For a decade, gutsy grassroots groups have rebelled and defeated these Wall Street profiteers, and the people of this Appalachian region are still adamantly opposed. But here comes Biden to rescue Manchin and his fossil fuelers with a dirty backroom deal overruling the will of the people, proclaiming that he wants to advance America's conversion from fossil fuels to renewable energy. Biden is pushing a bill to make it easier and faster to get federal approval for new energy projects. Fine. But his bill specifically greases the skids for more fossil fuel projects. And guess which one is the first in line for quick approval? Yes, Brother Joe Manchin's Mountain Valley Pipeline. Pumping frack gas through three states would produce a mess of leaks and spills. But the project would also emit some 40 million metric tons of planet-warming gas a year, equivalent to the annual pollution of 10 coal plants. As the Natural Resources Defense Council puts it, we won't build the clean energy economy of the future by doubling down on the dirty fuels of the past. This is Jim Hightower saying, for information and action on this raw deal, connect with Appalachian Mountain Advocates, appvoices.org.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So when you look at the polling on the debt ceiling, you know, there's 60% of people are saying, hey, we want to see things cut. And I think, as you know, our guest earlier said, you know, when you start talking about things to cut, and there are calculators out there to go, what would be your priority? You know, would you cut Social Security? Would you cut Medicaid? Would you cut, you know, food stamps for children? Would you cut things for veterans? What would you cut? What are your priorities? The vast majority of people that I've known who've gone through this find it very difficult to cut from people that they know. We're not even talking about raising revenue or doing any of those things. So I thought it'd be an interesting conversation to see in the state of Pennsylvania, in my neck of the woods, what would happen if we have a failure of Congress to do its job and raise the debt ceiling and fund the things that we've agreed that we need. What's it going to mean for Medicaid? What's it going to mean for food stamps? That's why I've asked Robin Stelly to come talk with us. Robin is the statewide organizer for the Pennsylvania Health Access Network, pahealthaccess.org, the website. We'll get links out on social media. You can take a look at that. Robin, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting me here. Yeah, I come from Pennsylvania Health Access Network. We're one of the, probably the largest consumer advocacy organization that focuses on healthcare. And we want to make sure that Pennsylvanians have access to quality, affordable healthcare and equitable healthcare. The most important thing we do probably, though, is run a statewide consumer assistance program. And we just get thousands of calls, 10,000 calls a year from people who want to know, what do I do? I don't have insurance. What do I do? I got this letter from Medicaid help. And we've enrolled over 10,000 individuals in Medicaid Marketplace, which is the penny.com coverage, and CHIP since 2013. And we work in local communities and all the way across the state. And it's because we have this helpline that we hear from people who use the programs that you're talking about, Medicaid, CHIP, the Affordable Care Act, health insurance plans. So we hear from them daily. We know what kind of value these plans bring to their lives. We know what would happen if they didn't have access to healthcare. We've been fighting in defense of Medicaid. We call it Medicaid expansion. It's the expansion of Medicaid to cover people who are not traditionally eligible for Medicaid. These are people who are able to work, don't have children, so they're not disabled. They are not, they're, like I just said, they don't have children, so they're not traditional Medicaid eligible for Medicaid, but they are eligible for Medicaid expansion. And we know for a fact that this has saved lives. Being able to access doctors when you need it is a lifesaver. Yep. It's Medicaid expansion that would be targeted by all of what you're talking about around this latest flare up of the debt ceiling.
So this was going to be my first question. You know, who would be hit hardest by a default? You know, if money dries up, you know, where does that go? I mean, you look at our tattered social safety net. You know, who are going to be the ones most harmed by this? Is it going to be our Republican friends in Congress? I seriously doubt it. Will it be their donors? Seriously doubt it. I think it's going to be the poor working people in my state and others that are at the margins already, that this is going to harm the most.
Well, yes. Short answer, yes, because they're always the people that are harmed first. But longer answer is, it's unthinkable, literally unthinkable. You cannot default. There's no way. And because once you do default, yes, those things are going to happen, like you're talking about. Medicare is going to have to say, you know what, we don't know when we're going to be able to pay you, doctor. And doctors are going to turn around and say, well, you know what, patient, I'm not sure I can take you because I don't know if I'm going to be paid or when I'm going to be paid. So that's going to explode in the face of people who are not traditionally marginalized, right? People who simply use Medicare are going to have a problem. Medicaid, absolutely. Interest rates are going to skyrocket. Jobs are going to disappear. This is going to be, would be cataclysmic. There's no way to overstate this. And so that's why it's such an effective weapon.
Right.
Right. Because, and it isn't just people on the margins and what we think of as low-income people. This is Wall Street losing its mind next too, because they know this would be catastrophic for them. The McCarthy bill that the House passed is what would be most catastrophic or damaging to the people you're talking about, the people who rely on the most forward-facing part of Medicaid, and of course SNAP. Because these are the programs that are going to be cut. In Pennsylvania alone, if the McCarthy bill were to become law, and it is not, but if it were, heaven forbid, that means 500,000 Pennsylvanians losing their health coverage. And that's through the attachment of work requirements to Medicaid, which would be a lot of taxpayer money thrown away. And the only thing we would end up with at the end of that complete tossing out the window of taxpayers' billions would be fewer people on Medicaid. Wouldn't it lead to more people working? Wouldn't it lead to more people getting the care they need? It would just lead to people off of the rolls of Medicaid, which is not what we need to pay hundreds of billions of dollars to do.
No, you're right. But you know, what do you say to the person who goes, you know, everyone should work? If you want, you know, the old
everyone old phrase, is working.
The old phrase of if you want to eat, you got to work.
Everyone is working.
Well,
I mean, that's what I said. It's a sham.
Okay.
This you have to work to get Medicaid is just a false premise. Everyone essentially who uses Medicaid is working if they are able to work. They are not working if they're not able to work, and they wouldn't be covered under Medicaid work requirements anyway. I think that their figure came out recently of something like 9%. It would mean 9% of people who use Medicaid might be pulled into, you know, being punished with work requirements. And I'm sorry, for the number of people who are going to be tossed off the rolls incorrectly due to paperwork errors, deadlines missed, all this kind of stuff, seasonal work where I worked for 3 months, then I didn't work for 3 months. Well, then what happens? All of that, all the people who are going to lose their coverage through those paths doesn't make up for the 9% that we're going to pull in.
No, I'm glad you framed it that way, that it's all just a scam, because, you know,
it's total scam.
You know, look, most people go, well, how can you be against work requirements? I'm not against, as long as there's a job. And if you're going to be having government be the employer of a last resort, I'm okay with that. But that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about putting a mandate in place and then going, go ahead, go find something that's not out there. Or as you point out,
paying for it. Who's going to pay for this? It's not free.
Right.
Hiring people to track down people and say, you know, file this and get this paper in, and if you didn't get the paper, let me send it again. All that it costs billions of dollars nationwide. You know, in Pennsylvania, it's going to probably cost millions. And to do that, for what reason? They work. They're already working. All you're asking them to do is reprove that they're working. And if their paperwork gets lost, it's just money thrown away. And if they get kicked off of Medicaid because of a snafu, now you've hurt somebody.
Yeah.
You've taken away the care they need to stay healthy. And if they're not healthy, can they work? No.
It all seems punitive to me. And it all seems...
It is. It's about one thing, driving down the rolls of Medicaid. That's all it's about. It has nothing to do with bringing back people to work. We know this because we've seen it work. They had it in Arkansas. They had work requirements attached. Did nothing to drive up the number of people working. All it did was cost a lot of money to kick a lot of people off Medicaid. That's it.
Yeah,
that's
no,
all Medicaid work requirements do.
And you brought up the work requirements. I've been waiting for a golden oldie to come popping back up and drug testing to come back. Because if you remember that moronic, idiotic, you know, bit that they did, they spent millions of dollars to catch no one. I mean, literally, they were catching no one, but they were spending millions and millions of dollars just wasting money on testing that caught virtually no one. Because guess what? When you give poor people money, they generally use it on the things that they need, like food and shelter.
Insurance. If they qualify to buy insurance at penny.com, we have a report we just released that shows that people, if they were given a little bit more to help buy insurance at penny.com, they would buy better insurance, keeping themselves healthier.
You're listening
people
to the Rick Smith
Show. People who are low income are smart. People who are low income know how to navigate a very difficult world out in front of them very, very well. They're smart. They are clever on top of that. And we just need to give them that boost to keep them afloat and let them live their lives.
It's tough to be poor in this country. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show here with Robin Stelly. Robin is the statewide organizer for the Pennsylvania Health Access Network, PA. healthaccess.org, the website, if you want to check out the incredible work that they do. You know, this is one of those moments where you go, you know, I've had conservatives say, well, we're going to cut federal spending, but the states can pick this up. Can the state of Pennsylvania make up
absolutely
the difference?
Absolutely. 100% they cannot. Absolutely not. If you're talking about Medicaid expansion, the federal government right now pays 90% of that. So for $100 spent on Medicaid expansion, the federal government pays 90 of those dollars. To imagine that Pennsylvania would somehow be able to find money to pay to pick up all the people that the federal government wants off the rolls is just ridiculous. There's no way they could possibly do it. Where would we get that money? The state of Pennsylvania doesn't print money like the federal government does. The federal government could do it. There's no problem here. No problem at all. This is all, it's made up out of whole cloth. We saw it when Obama was president. We didn't see it when Trump was president. We see it now when he blew $2 trillion hole in the deficit. Silence. But now, when President Biden has a plan to reduce the deficit by $3 trillion, President Biden has a plan to reduce the deficit by $3 trillion. Now this thing happens. The debt ceiling nonsense happens, and the only way they'll be satisfied is if we make people on the margins suffer.
So this is a situation where, you know, if you're President Biden, you're looking at any deal that you'll make with the devil is going to harm people and harm them badly. And as you said, harm the people who are least able to shoulder it the worst. And if you do not, if you allow it to default, then everyone is going to struggle and suffer because of it, and not just here, but probably globally. So he's kind of in a position where I think he's got to take a firm stand in this moment. And as I've been saying, I think once we default, you file under the 14th Amendment, you take it to the Supreme Court, and you pay the freaking bills, and we finally be done with this kind of a hostage crisis and not allow this to happen again.
So you're rolling the dice. Let me ask you, because
you've laid this scenario out very, very well. If you're in that situation, don't you roll the dice? Because there are no good options in this moment. There are no, hey, yeah, we're going to cut all of these programs that Republicans say that they absolutely want, and default is going to be bad. What do you do?
I don't know. I'm not an economist, so I'm not going to pretend like I know. But right. I know there. I've been reading, and I know there's something called a short-term default, which doesn't sound great. The panic that would probably ensue would be difficult for people. Who knows where people would fall when they come to blame people for this kind of, like, who's to blame? Who's to blame? It's hard to know where they're going to put the blame, even though it's pretty obvious where the blame would lie. I don't know. I'm glad I'm not President Biden, but you would think to wait until the very, very last minute before he does something that's going to mean that people who cannot afford it will suffer the most. It really is unconscionable. To tighten up the work requirements with TANF and SNAP is just...
Doesn't it seem cruel? Doesn't it seem
absolutely.
Punitive? Doesn't it seem just mean-spirited? I mean, and this is where...
And it's not what America wants. America doesn't want this. Medicaid has a 75% approval rating in America. It has a plurality of approval with Democrats and Republicans and independents. We love Medicaid. We love Medicaid. 75% approval. What has 75% approval? I mean, vanilla ice cream doesn't have 75% approval. It's around the 50s. Ice cream has in the 80s, but vanilla ice cream can't touch Medicaid. People don't want people to suffer. It's just the facts. And when I talk to people on the helpline and when I talk from the helpline, I know that they don't want to have to need help. But when they need help, they're thrilled it's there, and they want their lives to continue.
Yeah. So
without
as you're talking
having to
people,
worry about.
Is this coming up? Is this a concern for people right now that you're dealing with?
Usually if I'm talking to people, they are worried about, what am I going to do? Where am I going to go? So our helpline, I'm not a helpline worker. Our helpline is the best in the state. They catch the people and they say, this is what we can do. This is what you can do. And then when I talk to them, I ask them, like, what was that like? What do you think? What if you didn't have Medicaid? And it's always the same. Medicaid has saved my life. The Affordable Care Act is a lifesaver. That word, lifesaver, that phrase, saved my life, I hear it all the time. All the time.
Yeah,
so, I know. And they're not overstating it.
Yeah, this is one of the, and
to have them be worried about this, to have people have to go to bed at night worrying about whatever might happen next. You know, that's the tip of the horrible iceberg, and then to go through with the cuts is just unconscionable.
Yeah, well, I think Matt Gaetz said it best today.
People
may want to, you know, do some of these things, but you know why would we deal with the hostage? Why would we deal with the hostages? You know, being you and me.
Was that a mistake? Was that like a slip of the tongue?
No,
I know he's not a genius, but is that what was that?
No, I truly believe that. Look, where I believe is that there are people in our Congress who want to touch the hot thing. They want to push the button. They want to default. They want the chaos. My view on this is not just that the Republicans are mean-spirited and hate social programs. They want and need a recession for 2024. This, to me, is very calculated. This is very well planned out. They know what they're going to do, and it's all about causing the chaos that they've been telling us is going on. They've been saying recession since Joe Biden put his hand on the Bible. And they need that in 2024. So going to be an interesting cycle.
Can I just make one point about that in case anybody is sitting around thinking, I can't get my head around that? You can get your head around it. All you have to think about is what happened at the beginning of the COVID emergency. Remember the COVID emergency?
Yeah.
That was a relatively small disruption compared to what a default would be. And the only difference between the two, other than scale, is this. In the COVID emergency, the federal government was able to step in. Remember the checks they sent out?
Yeah.
Remember essential services had to stay in place? The federal government could step in. If we're talking default, the federal government cannot step in. And now, do you want to go through that a COVID-like emergency economically without a backstop of the federal government?
Ask any conservative. The answer is yes, Robin. Ask most conservatives. The answer is yes. Government shouldn't do anything. Pat Toomey.
If they want to be able to pay their mortgages, because interest rates are going to skyrocket. If you want to be able to pay your mortgage, I know there are plenty of people on all throughout this political spectrum who have mortgages and they want to be able to pay them. If they want the credit card debt to stay where it is, if they want interest rates not to.
Well, because I think most people don't think it's going to affect them. They think, oh, well, I'm going to be okay. And then it happens, you know, oops. We're going to find out. But Robin, I appreciate the time.
I'm more worried about the cuts being made than I am about default. And we really want to get the message out there to please call your representatives in Congress and let them know that you want a clean debt bill passed. Whether or not you think it will happen, just call and let them know that the pressure is out there for a clean debt bill, meaning no cuts to Medicaid, no cuts to SNAP, no work requirements, none of this nonsense. Just get this debt ceiling bill passed.
And you guys are running a call-in campaign, right?
Yes, we are.
And people can access that at pahealthaccess.org. It's right there to help.
Yes, we're going to try to make sure if you sign up to be on our mailing list, yes, you will receive it. That's the way to do that. And you can do that at pahealthaccess.org.
Good stuff, Robin Steele. I appreciate you taking time for us. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Rick. Bye-bye.
I appreciate the time. And look, you know, that's again, yeah, I you think about just how bad this is, and for no reason. That's the part that just blows my mind, for absolutely no reason. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back to wrap things up. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. I'm Rick Smith. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. How can unionized workers and unemployed workers stand together? Perhaps we can look to the past for examples of the power of such solidarity. On this day in labor history, the year was 1935. It was the height of the Great Depression. That April, workers who were part of the American Federation of Labor had gone out on strike against the electric auto light plant in Toledo, Ohio. Given the desperate economic times, only about half of the workers participated in the strike, and it seemed likely to fail. But then, the Lucas County Unemployment League joined the effort. An injunction had ruled that only 25 people could picket at a time. The Unemployed League ignored the injunction and crowded the picket lines. On May 21st, they called a meeting of 1,000 unemployed workers to the plant gates. With each passing day, the protests grew. They protested against the company and against the scabs who were brought in to break the strike. Finally, today in labor history, the sheriff decided to turn back the picketers. He marched on the protesting workers with men paid for by the National Guard. They let loose fire hoses and tear gas on the crowd. The picketers responded by throwing bricks and stones through the factory windows. The next day, the 900 National Guard troops marched on the picketers again. They fired their weapons into the unarmed crowd, killing two and wounding many more. Across Toledo, unions pledged to join a general strike. In response, the company capitulated, granting a 22% raise and union recognition for the workers. In 2001, a memorial honoring the strikers was commemorated in Toledo's Union Memorial Park. Two bronze strikers, one male and one female, stand on opposite ends of a low wall. On the wall, the words inscribed read, "Increased wages and improved conditions." Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. Let's talk stupid. Let's talk Congresswoman. Evidently, Bobo, Lauren Boebert, was explaining why she quit birth control. Oh boy, I can't wait for this one. She said, quote, "I left a prescription at a pharmacy once. I went to get birth control, and I was there at the counter and went to pay for it, and the price was very, very high. And I said, it's cheaper to have a kid. And I left it there, and now I have my third son." Really? This woman's in Congress. This person is making... Do you know who could help lower the cost of contraception? I don't know, maybe a congresswoman? You know, maybe a congresswoman could propose, what do they call that thing that they do when they do their job? Hold on, I'll remember it from Schoolhouse Rock when I was a kid. Oh yeah, bill! Maybe they could put a bill forth and people could vote on it and argue about it and pass it and then get it signed into law that says, you know what? We're going to pay for contraception because we're against abortion. This should be a Republican. This should be one of their things. Yes, we're against abortion, but we're going to help people not get pregnant if they don't want to. Seems very sane. Seems almost a bit rational. Seems like something that somebody, well, not a Republican, or at least one of our elected officials. This is a weird moment. And for anybody who's going to listen to Bobo, I have three kids. They are not cheap. Contraception would be much, much cheaper, especially if you can't afford them. And to have a congresswoman, to have that literally come out of her mouth is like the height of stupidity. Well, you know, it costs money, so I didn't do it. Whose fault is it? Let me turn this around. Whose fault is it that contraception is so high? I do remember there was a black guy in the White House. What was his name? Hold on. Oh, yeah, Barack Obama. Yeah, Obama was in the White House. And they did this thing on health care. It was Obamacare. Yeah, named after Obama. Yes. And in the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, they wanted to make sure that contraception was covered by basic plans. Make sure that and somebody lost their mind. Oh yeah, the entire Republican Party lost their mind and actually then took it to the Supreme Court. I remember there being a loudmouth guy on the radio. What was his name? Oh yeah, Limbaugh. You know, saying that I shouldn't have to pay for, you know, people to have sex, and he said it in a much more vulgar way than that. What was that woman's name? Sandra Fluke, I think maybe that's what it was. This is one of those moments where you go, contraception, something we should be funding in big ways. Now, also understand, as I've been saying for the last 18 years of doing this program, Republicans want to make abortions illegal. They want to overturn Roe. Congratulations, they did that. But they also want eventually to go after contraception. So am I surprised that dim-witted gun fetish Barbie is saying, no, I don't want you to cover your pistol. Don't holster that. I don't know. Is this what we want in Congress? Please, Colorado. Please do something. It's cheaper to have a kid. Really. I want to hear your thoughts. Is it cheaper to have a kid? I mean, I've got three of them. They're pretty pricey. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I want to hear the thoughts on this one. Is Bobo right? rick@thericksmithshow.com. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you get your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening.
You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.